It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
Brother of five, doing whatever I had to do to survive. I'm not saying what I did was all right. Trying to break out of the ghetto was a day-to-day fight. Being down so long, getting up didn't cross my mind. But I knew there was a better way of life, and I was just trying to find. You don't know what you do till you put under pressure. Across 110th Street is a hell of a tester. Across 110th Street, pimps trying to catch a woman next week.
No, a band apart is not a part of the show, but it should. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@wfyi.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Sozi. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog with a new installment today.
Oh!
If Doug put it in. So either way, you should check it out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
The voice you just heard is he's the one who decided to give we gave Curtis a rest and let Bobby step in. Mm-hmm. That's really not a bad substitute. That's Kobe Slagle.
Yep.
And we have a gaggle of guests.
That's what you call multiple guests.
A tribe, a buffet of guests.
It begins with G, just like goose.
Or a turducken of guests. Although that sounds like human...
Wouldn't we all have to be stuffed inside?
Yeah,
that's human centipede and nobody really wants... Well, this is not the first time you talked about stuffing or pulling things out. Monica Hartz is here.
Hello.
Along with Brian.
Yo.
Do we have Brian's intro?
It's called Inception.
Hearts must be here.
That's me.
That's 18. We have not received a cease and desist letter from Hans Zimmer yet, have we?
Well, he did something cool this past week, though. You saw all the stuff about the Bat Kid in San Francisco?
Yes.
Yeah, he actually wrote some theme music for the Bat Kid.
Oh, did he really?
That's awesome.
Oh, we got to find that. Let's find not today, but let's see if we can find it. Or I hate to put you on the spot. Kobe, are you here next week?
I don't know.
You know what you got to do? You got to check with your wife. Because next week, of course, is the Black Friday post-Thanksgiving edition of Film Sociology. We already have guests lined up.
Yes. But we already know it's going to be a rip-roaring show.
The problem is, of course, is technically it's a day off for those not on the air, even though you're sort of on the air.
Kind of.
So anyway, That's the cliffhanger. Will Kobe be here next week?
Tune in for the exciting
conclusion of film. That's right. See, I see. Going back to what you were saying, Brian, I think I wouldn't be surprised if Hans Zimmer had an orchestra follow the kid on wheels,
or at least a guy with a synthesizer,
or lots and lots of cellos,
and about 14 bass trombones.
That's right, yes. And they're following Bat Kid all over the place. I also see him. Bat Kid, stop. No, that note wasn't right. Do it again. Go back. Christopher Nolan's directing it.
Yes. So, the IMAX cameras going.
Exactly. Now, as if all of this nonsense wasn't enough, we have something bigger than the Hans Zimmer power ballad, The Return of Emma Soce.
Hello.
She doesn't have theme music?
She has her own. Yeah. She's bucking to get paid, but not here.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. So anyway, she's 12 and very excited to be here.
She's here.
Whatever, Dad.
Oh my gosh.
I got him for that. Anyway. The reason why Emma's here, besides the fact that I'm not gonna go fully into the Soce weekend festivities and how we mix one city with another, but one of the reasons why we have so many guests is because I think everybody in the studio is like 98% of college men, Kobe.
Stoked.
They are stoked because the most important movie in the history of cinema is
right.
This week.
Yes.
The Hunger Games.
Yay.
Wow. Okay, so yeah, Hunger Games, Catching Fire.
That's Hunger Games 2.
Yeah, Hunger Games 2, for those who don't. Yeah, if you don't have enough room or plastic letters on the marquee, the Hunger Games.
The hungrier two. Games.
More hungrier.
This time they're starving.
Too hunger, too furious. See, we didn't go right into Electric Boogaloo, folks, because we're public radio.
That's right.
Anyway, there was. I was talking with Kobe, and by the way, I gave Kobe a little insider tip, and I guess I'm going to give it to you, the public radio listener. There are certain theaters in your vicinity. There's one in Richmond that if a movie opens on a Friday, if you go to a certain theater's website, you may or may not see information of a screening on Thursday. Now, in the case of Indianapolis, there was one theater that I go to quite often that not only did they have screenings at midnight, but they also had screenings at 8, 9, and 10, and 11. So I'm guessing, did you go, Monica, to the north side?
No, I was at the old Showplace 16.
I see. Okay. So, because there was one, there were screenings at 8, and then 8:45. It was like every 45 minutes, and then there were like a dozen screenings at midnight.
Yeah, there were like 20 screenings prior to midnight. The only midnight showing, though, was the IMAX.
And you,
I didn't go.
No, that's okay, because you have a big bottle of water, and we need you strong.
Yes.
So, anyway.
So Thursday is the new Friday.
It's kind of like Black Friday. They started early.
Yeah. And apparently March is the new Memorial Day, according to Chris Lloyd.
Yes, that's true. And were there any losers in tents waiting in line to go see it when you got to the theater?
No, the closest to that was probably myself and my friend Ashley, because we were at Archery League and we left early
to
get there. And we literally waited 2 hours and we were two of four people in
line. But that's two. That's not like, you know. Months.
No, this wasn't Star Wars level. I was at the premiere for Star Wars.
They plan for these kinds of things. There's no need to camp out anymore because they've got all those advanced screenings.
That's right. So Monica, I'm sorry, you just came back from what?
Archery League.
Were you in your Hunger Games / Running Man onesie?
No, I was not.
You want one of those, don't you?
I almost got one for Halloween, actually.
Way to go, Big Bri. All right, so yes, part two, Hunger Games, Catching Fire, and we have some audio, as if you aren't stoked enough already. And,
yes.
And this is so important, Kobe won't talk over it.
I won't.
No.
Let's do it.
All right.
You understand that whatever I do, it comes back to you and Mom. I don't want you to get hurt.
Since the last games, something's different. I can see it.
What can you see?
Hope.
You saved us. I know that. But I can't go on acting for the cameras and then just ignoring each other in real life.
She's not who they think she is. And she has to be eliminated.
I agree, but in the right way. At the right time.
We have to go. Before they kill us, they will kill us.
People want to fight. I'm staying here.
He fought very hard in the games, Miss Everdeen. But they were games. Would you like to be in a real war? Imagine thousands of your people dead. Your loved ones gone.
What do I need to do?
This is the 75th year of the Hunger Games. The tributes are to be reaped from the existing pool of victors.
Madam! I get to say goodbye.
Madam!
So what do we do? I think these games are going to be different.
The 75th Hunger Games!
Ready to work?
There she is, Captain 17! The girl on fire!
I want you guys to forget everything you think you know about the games. Last year was child's play. This year, you're dealing with all experienced killers.
Any last advice?
Stay alive. The real enemy is.
There are certain members of our studio audience shaking with anticipation by the trailer itself.
Especially even when we've already seen it.
Right, exactly.
Are you going to see it again?
Oh, yes. I have to take him. I have to take Brian.
Oh!
You were not there, sir! Yes.
No, he was sick last night.
Oh, sorry. Yes. But you're feeling better.
I am.
You know what? Film sociology heals.
That's right. It does.
That's right.
I wish.
And I'm going to cough all of this microphone so the next person who uses it.
It might be us. Oh, so we'll give it a once over between now and whenever. Now, one thing of note, Francis Lawrence took over the directing job from Gary Ross. Francis Lawrence probably best known for I Am Legend.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Woo!
Yeah, I know. Well,
Constantine.
Yeah, he did do that, didn't he? Yeah. Ooh, okay. So I'll start. I'll be brief because I have guests that are way more excited about this than I am, and that's cool. It's fine. That is good. I've not read this. It's not book sociology, and I need to get an eye roll from my daughter. So it does pick up. It
and
does
you
become.
Just got it. You just got it.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, it's just
I know.
It's grand.
A, you know what? It's on a constant loop. But it, of course, picks up about a year after the last Hunger Games, and nobody has aged that badly, so that's good. It's not like it's not Malcolm in the Middle's disease, although I'll be worried about the next one when they if did they already finish did they film the third or
I think they're done filming.
Okay, so that's taken care of.
With principal photography.
Okay, so we have the love triangle, which you know not the most fascinating thing in the world for me, and then. We now move into a new Hunger Game, which looks a lot like Hawaii with a little bit of Georgia, as opposed to I think West Virginia where they shot it last time.
So it's like Survivor. They keep moving the location.
Well, yeah, the arena changes every year.
They actually did in the credits. They did have Hawaii as one of the locations.
Yes, they were trying not to interfere with Julie Taymor's The Tempest, which was that was a while back. For me, once the games start up, it really kicks in. Mm-hmm. I think personally they could have gotten to the games a little quicker. This thing is about 2.5 hours, although three with lots of trailers.
I thought that was on purpose. I was just mimicking you.
For once, you were being just genuine and not intentional, right, honey? Okay, so somebody doesn't agree with me, and somebody was clearing your throat. All right. No, but once it kicks in, it's a lot of fun. We have one new character. It's Philip Seymour Hoffman, who's brought as if Donald Sutherland isn't a big enough foil.
Yeah,
we don't have enough gravitas here.
So let's bring in an Oscar winner, and it turns more into let's add more dimensions to it, like spinning islands and poison mist. Not the mist. That's a Frank Darabont film.
Stephen King novel.
I saw that.
You saw The Mist?
Yes, I saw The Mist.
Really? Mm-hmm. You okay?
Yeah.
Because you know Kobe and his anti-scary freaky movie status. So your choice?
No, that was not my choice.
I feel bad for you because the ending of The Mist the movie was even worse than the ending of The Mist the novella.
Let's call the whole thing off. was it Fair Sweet's selection?
No, this was
pre-Bianca. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But not Princess Bubblegum.
Thank you.
Two different PBs.
And then the film, this is, of course, what I would call a stepping stone film, because it does end not on a big note, but on, no, no, what I mean by, it doesn't have a big, glorious splash ending.
No,
it has a
it
very
doesn't.
Intense close-up of Ms. Lawrence, and,
spoil it for him.
Oh, gee, he doesn't know the story.
Don't worry about it.
I've read the books.
We'll just say it leaves a strong but not a huge final moment to lead you into the third one. Is that fair?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
oh, by the way, and they're all made from people. There, I messed up. I messed up the ending there. No, I didn't. So anyway, I liked it quite a bit. Didn't love it as much as these two, so I'm just going to let them talk because I do this often. Ladies.
Now that was a good movie.
Emma, you want to start?
Not really.
Okay.
I can start.
Yes, Monica, please start, and Emma will follow you in this case. So,
well, you mentioned Frances Lawrence earlier, and I thought that was actually when I saw the previews, I checked out his CV, what he directed before, and he had done a lot of music videos. So based on the previews, I was like, this is going to be really flashy. Completely different take than Gary Ross had, which was very organic and lots of hand cam, and but I was thoroughly impressed. It went with the whole feel of the story. It worked really well.
And it has a darker tone.
Yes.
And I'm not saying it's not quite, I can't remember who followed up Chris Columbus in Harry Potter, but it does, there
Quarone.
Is, pardon?
It was Alfonso Cuarón.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Okay, so it is kind of a shift like that. I think the first Hunger Games, the game itself, the presentation, and yes, Stanley Tucci's bright teeth.
He's so perfect for that role.
Yes, he is. But I think there is a shift in tone. I remember dangerous, but kind of action stoked.
Because the first outing of kids killing each other was just entirely too cheerful.
Well, it becomes something different. It's not, it becomes a much, the Hunger Games in the first book, it's a very large event, but it becomes even more significant within the scope of the second book.
Because ESPN gets involved. Yeah. And they bring in...
It's on ESPN
when we start 10. Talking about sponsorships and,
that's
and
right,
rights they have, and broadcast
they have the,
licensing.
They have the NASCAR uniforms with the sponsors on them. And of course, this one we have is the Hunger Game All-Stars, which apparently includes Jeffrey Wright and Amanda Plummer, I think my favorite couple of the year.
Wow.
I'm like, really? And of course, the really, really old lady, I'm like, you're
Megs,
who really got shoved into that, really.
She's, I mean, again, it's one of those things that, like, they could only build on so much because they only had so much time.
Of course. So she got to, I'm not giving away whole watch, she got to be noble.
Yes, she did.
So anyway, you were very impressed with the look.
Yes, I was very, and I deliberately stayed away from the book because I was afraid. I was so afraid that it was going to be so different. But I hadn't read it, and I throughout the movie, I kind of had that whole little back thing going on in my mind. I was like, oh, my God, they did that. They did that. They hit that point and that one and that one, and that was really cool from a book reader's perspective. It was kind of those Harry Potter moments of, like, I didn't have any of the really bad Harry Potter moments where I'm like, why did you do that? The bridge isn't supposed to be there. The sky isn't purple. Like, what? I didn't really have very many of those moments, so.
We try not to in general.
Because this isn't book sociology.
That's right. It's film sociology.
Well, it's true. No, but it's a film based on a book I really liked.
So. Okay. So you were but you were happy with this.
Yeah, it was a really good adaptation. And of course, I mean, Jennifer Lawrence is just phenomenal. She's such a great actress.
She's phenomenal.
I have
notified Monica that if heaven forbid anything should happen to her, I've nominated Jennifer Lawrence as her understudy.
Really? Does Jennifer know this?
I think he has yet to inform her.
Really? No, obviously. I've been trying to get in touch with her first, and that's not really happening. So another eye roll from Emma.
She's not answering your fan mail.
You know what? You know the thing about...
That's not what I said.
Thank you, Don Johnson. Here's the restraining order means they're thinking about you. So So Emma, how did you enjoy last night's Hunger Games?
I really, really enjoyed it.
What made you really, really enjoy it?
Well, I guess mainly because first of all, I have not been able to get in time to read the second or third book So I didn't know what was going to happen.
Oh, man.
And so one thing I really liked was the other tributes this year. I really liked them quite a bit more than I did the ones from last year, just mainly because I think for me it's partly because I sort of get how this whole thing works a bit more.
Sure.
But also just because there's so many more likable people.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
Well, it was less centered on Bloodbath.
That too.
Because that first Hunger Games, that first shot of them running and then thwack and other Batman sounds.
I remember when I read that, I just sat there and I'm like, I don't know how they're going to do this rated PG-13. This is like an R-rated movie waiting to happen.
Oh, no,
violence is so prevalent.
Lots and lots of shaky cam.
In that case, lots and lots of shaky cam. And, of course, a very shaky MPAA system. But that's another story for another time.
Yeah.
So, but it sounded like you enjoyed it a great deal. So, very cool. We had an 8:40 or an 8:10 screening last night. And there were two screenings, and they were pretty full. We couldn't go to the 5 o'clock
double feature.
It just didn't work. But I will say, to embarrass Emma a little bit more, one of the things that I really appreciated about Hunger Games was immediately Emma was curious about the other films of Jennifer Lawrence. And that's a sign of a great film watcher. So we watched Winter's Bone, which was the thing that really put her on the map.
Extremely disturbing, but
really disturbing Ozark noir. And you know what? The 12-year-old can handle it. But really disturbing Ozark noir.
Oh yeah.
And you also got your introduction to John Hawks, and that's quite a bit because that guy is still. He's had quite the career. And then, of course, we watched Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah.
Did you like that?
I really like that.
Okay. I love that movie so much.
So, now, I'm curious, because I didn't ask you about this, because there were, like, 8 trailers last night, because Jennifer Lawrence's next film is probably going to be shown in about 3 or 4 weeks. Do you have any interest, Emma, in American Hustle?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, Amy Adams and
Amy,
and of course the guys in bad 70s garb. So
I just love the shot of Bradley Cooper with the curls.
Yeah, and it's David O. Russell, and apparently nobody beats him up on this set, so more power to him.
All right,
yay. I was looking on IMDb earlier to mark some releases on my calendar, and the weekend of December 20th,
day after my birthday,
is a huge weekend because we have Anchorman 2,
ooh,
obviously, American Hustle, and then Saving Mr. Banks. So that's going to be a full weekend at the theater for the Slagles.
Yes, indeed.
The weekends with the Slagles. It's a new program. We'll have to work on that. So
the Slagles at the cinema.
It's the off branch. So. Okay, cool. So that is all right. Sounds like.
Is there anything else this week?
Yes, there is. I'm glad you asked that because I was about ready to get into that. The other film that I got to see, and you can read Ed Johnson-Ott's review of this on Nuvo.net, but it's the film Kill Your Darlings, or also known as Daniel Radcliffe pushing Harry further and further away, as if Equus and How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying is enough. He now plays young Allen Ginsberg, enrolled at Columbia University in 1944, and comes along the lines of William S. Burroughs, played by Ben Foster, Jack Kerouac, played by Jack Huston, and
Lucian. I have to see this.
Okay, it opened today.
Okay.
and Lucian Carr, and also Michael C. Hall. Earlham's own Michael C. Hall.
Hey.
And so the first part of the film is, by the way, I love cinematic gene pools. Apparently, if you're Daniel Radcliffe and you're playing Allen Ginsberg, your parents are David Cross and Jennifer Jason Leigh. Ooh. Pondered that. Okay. Now everybody's thinking of Jennifer Jason Lawrence at either her hottest or most weird, and David Cross in general. So.
We also have Delivery Man this week, don't we?
I'm not going to talk about that yet.
But that is there in case you need that.
But it's fun to watch these big names in their early stages, and they're trying to push the envelope and break new ground in writing and poetry and literature. And then the second half of the film starts to become kind of a crime drama
because there is some. You know what happens, Kobe? Plot things happen, and it involves a dead body.
Oh yeah.
Yes, and it involves these characters, and it winds up not only changing their lives, but also how they write. And really good performances across the board. This is a scene that is handled with a great deal of respect. I think the Beats and the other film that's coming out later this year, Inside Llewellyn Davis, about the folk scene, TV made those a lot of major punchlines. And, mm-hmm. and someday I will find Maynard T. Cribbs and punch him in the throat. And Bob Denver, if I can get a shovel. But,
God. Get in line.
Yeah. But anyway, it does capture the feel of trying to break the mold in New York in the mid-40s. So definitely worth checking out. There's nothing. You have nothing.
That's good.
So, but yes, also opening today is Delivery Man. And in case anybody wanted to see a film where Vince Vaughn wound up fathering over 500 people because he donates quite a bit. Now, according to Ed Johnson, gave it a nice write up. There's a decent write up in the Non Nouveau, also known as the Indianapolis USA Today Star. but as Kobe and I were talking earlier, now Kobe has a list, mm-hmm. and Vince Vaughn is on that list.
Vince Vaughn is on that list,
and you do not want to be on Kobe Slagle's list,
or else he won't see your movie.
He will not. You will not get his Kobe
and
Slagle
you'll
dollars.
Be broke.
Not really.
Not really. Unless you keep making The Internship, you know, which was the funniest film of 2005, according to that's an Onion headline. All right, I didn't write that, but apparently in this one it's taking the character, the persona that people like Mr. Slagle do not like in Vince Vaughn, and making him a better person for it.
No.
You mean
the sad sack manchild?
Something like that.
Yeah.
So there, that's also out there. Now.
That is also a thing.
That's made and it's out there if you want to. The other things is if you go to Nouveau.net or pick up a new Nouveau, I'm really excited because they have the cover story is the documentary Medora, which is about the Medora Hornets, a Jackson County high school. They didn't win a game the season before, and it's looking very Jacksonville-esque. Thank you, football fan. And anyway, but it follows their season, and it follows the kids.
Does that mean they're going to move to L.A. if they don't win?
Nobody in L.A. cares about football. You know that. They're too busy leaving Dodger games early.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, the city of Los Angeles, also on Kobe's list.
It's on my list, too.
Yeah.
Okay, we can't say what Kobe really says, but anyway, but it captures it, you could say it's the anti-Hoosiers because it captures small town Indiana kids doing something, anything to either get out of town or just to relieve boredom. So, but that is being shown at a few places out there. I believe it's at your alma mater, Mr.
Yes,
Slagle.
It is. I've got it pulled up right here.
Why don't you pull it up there while I double check the dates?
I got you.
Throughout.
IU Cinema this weekend, tonight, Friday night, 7 o'clock. 2013 documentary Hoagie.
It's about Carmichael, not the sandwich.
Yes, thank you for clarity, Matt. It's all about clarity here.
Yep.
Midnight movies tonight, IU Cinema, midnight, 11:59, Possession from 1981.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Let's see.
Tomorrow, Saturday, 3 o'clock, The Best Years of Our Lives from 46.
Oh, really, really good.
Excellent film.
Soldiers Coming Home from War, and that's Frederick March, mm-hmm. and... Who else is in that? So
directed by William Wyler.
Directed by William Wyler. Yep.
Also tomorrow at 6:30 and 9:30 p.m. IU Cinema, Medora, and not just the movie, but filmmakers Andrew Cohen and Davey Rothbart are scheduled to present at all screenings.
That is going to be a cool thing. Mm-hmm. Now that is, and of course, Medora is also happening tonight at IMAX at 7 o'clock. Filmmakers and subjects will be there as well. You mentioned IU Cinema on the 23rd. Yes Cinema in Columbus on December 6th, and then the Cinema Center in Fort Wayne on December 14th. You can go to medorafilm.com for more information. But it's
making its rounds.
It's really making its rounds, and it's just a really solid, honest look at small town life and small town basketball, and not not very good small town basketball. So, all right, we're going to take a short break, and we will talk about titles that are new on DVD and Blu-ray. Got a 50th anniversary angle about the Kennedy assassination, and more with my lovely guests. So stick around. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So, do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Well, in case you didn't see it, here it is again.
R.I.P. Blockbuster Video.
That's very strong. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msosi@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Sosi. Hanging out with my daughter, Emma Sosi. Mrs. Sosi's down the hallway resting. And Monica and Brian Hartz are hanging out with us as well.
Yep.
Hello.
Now, apparently there blogs need to be plugged. So, Monica, you start.
Oh, it's uptightloveswild.wordpress.com.
Say that again.
Whoa.
uptightloveswild.wordpress.com.
What's it about?
Hear those keyboard clicks
stuff.
There?
Stuff.
Like the entry I wrote yesterday was text from Holly Golightly to Paul Varjak, inspired by a series on the Toast.
Your Huckleberry friend.
Yeah, my Huckleberry friend.
Assuming they had, you know, texting devices.
Well, right, no, it's the woman who originated it, she did like texts from William Blake. So, I mean,
I think I remember seeing something on Facebook on like if Germany and Russia were texting. No, I'm not going to take a whole lot. Just
yeah,
a little,
that was pretty yeah, hilarious. Just a little bit, I so. Like that a lot.
And Brian?
As usual, the film music blog is at cinematicmusic.blogspot.com.
And you said you just put in something?
Well, a couple weeks ago, yeah.
What was it about?
Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh!
An excellent score to a problematic film.
Weird film is, yeah, because there's some, as a guitarist guy I knew from college who would say, some parts are killer, some parts need some work.
Yep.
So you got Gary Oldman and Tom Waits and
yes.
The part that needs work is Keanu Reeves. The only way I get through that movie is by pretending that that's Daniel Day-Lewis.
Oh, see, the problem is he would pummel Dracula to a pulp. Or did you want to see Gary Oldman and Daniel Day-Lewis strip to the waist and come out duking?
Yes.
Well, there's Monica's Monica Hartz's Dracula.
How it's gonna go.
Although it's funny you mentioned that one of the 27 trailers that happened last night, Frankenstein.
I know.
The
trailer was like 2 minutes long.
Okay, it's with Aaron Eckhart as the Frankenstein monster, not Dr. Frankenstein. We've talked about this.
Yes.
But it is looking like a cheaper retread of Van Helsing. Let's make the Frankenstein creation this vigilante.
Also hunky and conflicted.
Hunky and conflicted.
I did see that
there
trailer.
Was. Did
it
you notice
awful.
How many like cliched lines there were in that preview? Like it ends.
I think it's.
Tonight.
I think it's from.
It was so bad.
I think it's from the folks that gave us the delightful Underworld movies.
It is actually. It is.
The first one was fun.
Yeah, Bill Nye is in this as well.
He
so
is.
He,
yeah.
You know the
what?
Scenes. But the scenes, not the science guy.
Oh,
oh shit. No, the you saw Love Actually? You,
no.
You were forced to see Love? What else have you, would you
no. Forced to see Love Actually?
Look, Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, Shaun of the,
Shaun
Dead.
Of the Dead.
He was the dad.
Oh, I can't remember. I haven't
oh, he's that guy. Look him up. Nighy. Yeah, look at so.
Oh, yes. Yes, okay.
Wow, that light bulb just went off and exploded over Kobe.
Because he has a computer.
Because he's yeah. And he's also a new member of Sitcom Husbandry.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay.
So, yeah, he was forced to love actually, or Altman Light as Mrs. Soucy called it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I saw that.
Apparently, called went, I Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Really? Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah, terrific. Oh, even more.
I remembered that.
Not like even the... I, like lowercase I, capital F Frankenstein, like
or
I,
like
comma Frankenstein,
like I Legend, yeah. Or.
I just like that preview was like almost 3 minutes long, and I still didn't know what the heck was going on.
That's okay. I believe it's a January. It's like a January, February, March release.
Yeah,
and it shows
the great cinematic dumping ground.
Yeah, it looks like a cinematic dumping ground. So anyway, that anyways, going back, Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula. There's some fascinating parts about that, and others that just don't quite. Make
but the
it.
Music is awesome.
Who so. Did the music on that?
It's a Polish composer named Wojciech Kilar, who also did, among others, The Ninth Gate. And,
oh, the yes, the Polanski film.
Portrait of a Lady. And, mm-hmm. Yes. Also has done some stuff with the great Polish director Andrzej Wajda. So.
Very good.
Yeah.
And on the new film sociology blog, I'm doing a series. I've been threatening to do this for a while, and now I'm coming through with my threats. But it's a retrospect, as I call it, the last 1983 retrospect, because everybody's been doing 30 anniversaries, except for today. Today's the 50. But looking back at what was a very influential film year for me, 1983. I was 13, and I came across some films that helped change my point of view about cinema. And so I'll be talking about some of these. Next week's first installment will be Bill Forsythe's Local Hero, which Ed Johnsonat of Nuvo has declared the greatest film ever made. So, what? He did.
That's, I thought he...
Take
no,
that,
Wild,
rules of the game.
He loves Wild in the Streets. But yes. But he was on last week and not afraid to plug either Wild in the Streets or Local Hero. But no, Local Hero is a fun, fun film. We'll talk about Local Hero, Tender Mercies, The Big Chill, and the Francis Ford Coppola S.E. Hinton double feature of The Outsiders and Rumblefish. So it was a really solid year, and I think it's kind of an overlooked year because it's between 1982, which of course had Gandhi, E.T., Tootsie,
Blade Runner,
and then 1984, which had Ghostbusters, Amadeus. I mean, that was just like, you know, one blockbuster after another. So I feel like it kind of gets left in the middle. And so anyway, that's you can read the intro of that on Film Sociology. Emma does not have a blog yet, but she has thoughts.
Yes, I do.
Yes, you do.
I do have thoughts.
Do you have anything to share with us that's appropriate for the show?
Not really.
Okay.
Either the question is, do you want to share them, or are they just not appropriate?
Oh. Yeah, Emma, between this is just an inside joke between dad and daughter. We cannot quote The Heat. Okay.
Why not?
Because I want to continue to work here. That's why.
Fine.
All right. New titles this week. The other end of the world film that we then now that this is out, we no longer need any more end of the world films. The World's End. Speaking of Hot Fuzz and
yes.
Shaun of the Dead
yes.
from those guys. Little bromance reunion of guys trying to hit 12 pubs in one night. And along the way, they find out that the world is taken over by robots and want to take over everything. And Pierce Brosnan. A lot of fun. So between this and This Is the End, I'm done with End of the World movies. So no more. Don't need any more.
Reportedly, This Is the End was, in fact, the last video rented from a Blockbuster video.
Yes, it was. I saw that in The Onion. There's pictures of guys with the DVDs. So,
oh, wow.
So kudos on that. Also out is Two Guns with Denzel Washington and Mark Wahlberg, and it's a film that is really relying on the charm of the two leads, and it almost quite pulls it off. That was terrible. There are two guys, of course, who double cross each other, but they have to work together and are dealing with the drug cartel, played really well by Edward James Olmos.
He Yay. Plays the entire cartel.
Yes, he is the cartel. And you know what? Jack Nicholson is the Shore Patrol, and we can't say any more about that. but at the beginning of it seems to be almost like a throwback to the Peckinpah films of the early 70s, films like The Getaway and The Killer Elite. And it feels about maybe last third of the film, the guy who directed Mark Wahlberg in Contraband, it just felt like, you know what, let's just blow a bunch of stuff up. And that's kind of how that film turned out.
Kind of like the Michael Bay school of filmmaking.
Cheaper than Michael Bay, not as expensive, and wow. shorter, thank God, and no bad power ballads. So, now this also out on DVD and Blu-ray is a film that I remember we had all guys in the studio, and none of us saw the film when it opened, and we hung our heads in shame because it had Jennifer Aniston as a stripper, and that's We're the Millers. Stop hitting me, Emma. This is Jason Sudeikis and Jennifer Aniston. Ed Helms, your guy. Is Ed Helms on your guy list, Kobe?
No, I like Ed Helms.
You know what I mean? But, like, he's one of your cool guys.
Yeah, he's...
You're a Cedar Rapids fan.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot of lists, doesn't he?
Yeah. Oh, we don't have time for the list. You know what? We don't... Spielberg's going to make Slagle's list. And it's,
oh.
Just... No. I was intrigued. It took four screenwriters to make this film. It's about Sudeikis is a guy who has to pull a favor for a drug lord, played by Ed Helms, because all drug lords look like Ed Helms. And he's got to bring back some – he has to smuggle some marijuana from Mexico to the United States. And, of course, he poses as a family man, including Jennifer Aniston and Emma – not Emma Stone.
I'm on it.
Thank you.
Emma Roberts?
Yes.
Watson.
Thank you. Emma Roberts, not
Tom
Emma Watson.
Not, no, she's too far above that.
Yeah, so, but she was in Bling Ring.
Isn't she the one
that
in...
That was Sofia Coppola.
Yes, but Emma Watson was in it.
I know, but I'm saying it has prestige because of Sofia Coppola.
No, it doesn't.
Was she the one that...
They think it does.
But it still doesn't.
Was she the one in Aquamarine?
That's your movie, Emma. I don't know.
I don't remember. I'm also pretty sure it had...
I actually think she was. I think Emma Roberts was an Aquamarine.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the most Aquamarine has ever been discussed on public radio.
I also think it has the cousin from the last Narnia film.
Terrific. Anyway, they're all posing as a family, and guess what? Even though they don't like each other and they have to work together, there are moments where they sound like a family. Yeah. And also, you will get cameos by funny actors like Ron Swanson and Luis Guzman. And guess what? When they show up, their character is going to do about a 180-degree turn by the end of the scene, if not by the end of the film. One of those pictures.
Wow.
I know. We could use that. We keep needling Monica about coming up with an intro that would be sort of semi-appropriate. And,
yeah,
I
haven't done it yet.
No. So, but that was pretty good.
So I've been watching way too much 30 Rock.
That's really okay. So anyway, that's out there. It's a rental. It's okay. The film movement, which is the art film of the month club, which is very cool. And hello, Lisa Trifone, for sending me that. This is, films from around the world, art house films from all over. And the one I got to see from, if I'm catching up, just got a new one in the mail this week. But, this past week, there's a British drama called Broken, which is a very small budget, no budget film with Tim Roth and Cillian Murphy. And it's interchanging lives of three households in a cul-de-sac in England. And the really strong performance is the little girl who – could you look up Tim Roth and Broken, Mr. Slagle, please? But it's we have a girl who witnesses one of her neighbors getting beat up by one of the other neighbors because the three bitchy daughters from this household claims that the innocent young man did pervy things to her, and – Right, and then the little girl witnesses this, and the intertwining lives of all of these families are really good, not in a cliched way, not Little Children or American Beauty, but it's really a nice drama with an 11-year-old girl as the lead.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Tim Roth gets to play a nice guy for a change. So,
wow.
So believe, and he even says, and there's an interview with the cast, and he even says, it's nice to play a good guy for a change. So... So there is that. Do you have it up there?
Yes. What am I looking
look
for?
Look at the cast. There's a little girl in there. Not Llewellyn.
Lily James?
Nope.
Sita Indrani?
No.
Nope. Lino Facioli?
What nope. film are you on?
Yeah, what are you?
That doesn't sound like
I'm good. On Broken here.
Okay, keep going.
That's in.
Oh, man. Eloise Lawrence. There it is. Thank
Eloise
you.
Lawrence.
Yes. So.
And is this a recent film?
Yeah. Okay.
2012.
All right.
So check that out. And then we get to a film, Paranoia, which I know I didn't know anybody who got to see this film, but I did. And it has Liam Hemsworth. That was Emma, by the way. So
Liam Hemsworth plays Gale in The Hunger Games. I know. I'm just kidding.
Well, he gets
to whispering.
I don't know. But he gets a star in this one, and it's kind of a if you mixed a 21st century Big Brother version of Wall Street meets The Conversation. He's a tech guy who is fired by a company but hired by a rival company to go and infiltrate the other company and try to steal things, and the two rival company heads, Gary Oldman and a bald Harrison Ford.
That's right.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the Air Force One reunion that nobody asked for.
Especially with a bald Harrison Ford.
Well, he needed to do something to change his look, so there was that. And Amber Heard is in this film as well. And
otherwise known as the girl who dates Johnny Depp.
Sure. And and Liam's dad, I love cinematic gene pools. The mom is, of course, not there, but Liam's dad is played by Richard Dreyfuss.
Wow.
So she must have been drop dead gorgeous.
Must have been. Or the mailman must have been really hot.
Wow. As somebody who's been compared to Richard Dreyfuss, that's not funny. So anyway, yeah, very generic by the numbers thriller. Ford and Oldman get two scenes together, and it's just not enough. So that's kind of unfortunate. And also out on Blu-ray, which I don't think anybody here saw, Planes.
Mm-mm.
No.
Yeah.
And Kobe,
I was looking at some coming releases into next year, and there's going to be a Planes Fire and Rescue.
Will it go straight to video?
I think that's what it is, and I did not know that Julie Bowen was in Planes.
But you're still not going to rent it.
No.
Because it's...
Well, she wasn't. Her voice was
one
in
of
Planes.
One of the main voices, Dane Cook.
I know.
Ugh.
Dane Cook's on the list.
I grew
apparently
out of after high school.
Apparently I'm probably on Monica's list, too. All right, we got a couple of old titles. Night of the Comet is out on Blu-ray if you need the 80s end of the world picture out there. And I was talking with Brian earlier, the original 1976 John Carpenter film Assault on Precinct 13. Now, I don't know if you need this on Blu-ray because I don't know how much you can clean this film up, but it's a really solid 70s version of Rio Bravo.
Yep.
You have a police precinct which is in the process of moving. So there's, a handful of prisoners, a handful of cops, and some really nasty street thugs with bad weaponry who shoot little girls at ice cream stands, which I remember seeing that in the film, seeing that on TV, and that just flipped me out. I think it was the first time I saw a child just shot.
Ooh.
And this was before Once Upon a Time in the West, Emma.
Okay.
But
it's a very good face.
You don't need to see Assault on Precinct 13 unless you want to.
No, thanks.
No, but you did like Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yeah.
Really? I thought you liked it more than that.
It's one of Leone's best.
The oh my god, it's Henry Fonda look and Charles Bronson being all harmonica-like and...
Harmonica-like.
All harmonica. His character's name Harmonica, mister. Show some respect.
I haven't seen that. Well, that was one of the first What Is Kobe Watching movies, and I've...
Yes, it was.
It's been a few years.
And we all salute Claudia Cardinale.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, even Monica nods on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, it's a tight little B movie. Really, it's Kobe, it's scary, but it's not a horror movie. Because it's...
Is it freaky?
It's not freaky. It's no, it's
just,
tense.
Apparently it's just murder children.
Being stuck in a closed space when people are coming in. So, and it's better than The Purge.
Okay. Was that all right? Was it creepy?
Purge?
Yeah.
I don't like The Mask. Mask was just doing things, so. All right. Let's move on. Oh, the other thing that's out on Blu-ray, I remember seeing that. I have it. I haven't watched it since the first time I bought it. But the film Russian Ark And the big big stunt on this is, it is the history of it's Russian history told through a single shot, a single take, a 90-minute take through a museum.
Wow.
So
wow.
There you go.
Sounds really ambitious.
Camera nerds, go check it out if you haven't already. So, because I remember this is a film I brought up on FM radio, non-public radio, and got hit really hard by all the morning show guests. So, there, take that, guys. I mentioned it again.
They beat you up?
No, they didn't beat me up. I got made fun. There was a period when I was on Smiley's show and on 1430 AM's morning show. Or even on the track, where it got to the point where if I wanted to mention an art film, I had to really come up with a good pitch for the plot and really hype it up. And sometimes I would get caught. And near the end of the pitch, they go, "What language is this in?" Japanese. and then,
subtitles.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Wow. So, you know, because as I remember saying on Smiley's morning show, I can't review Old School every week. I can't.
No, you really can't.
And I really don't want to, so.
No.
All right. How we got time, Slagle?
We got 10 minutes.
Good. Good, good, good. Yay. Now, this past week, today is actually the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination. And every now and then, I'll come across a film that I've heard about, and I should check it out. And in the case of this was a film that was up for a Golden Turkey Award, the very fun Harry and Michael Medved book from the early 80s, which was one of my introductions to the world of bad cinema. And this was the original Golden Turkey Awards book. And this was a film that was – the category was Biggest Ripoff in Hollywood History. Now, looking back at this book, which I try to look at once a year because it's fun and it reminds me that there are certain titles I want to check out just for the heck of it. And so with that in mind, this was a film that was, again, nominated for Biggest Ripoff in Hollywood History. Why am I bringing this up today? Because it's a film from 1977, I believe, called The Greek Tycoon. This was a film with Jacqueline Bisset and Anthony Quinn. If I made you look up Jacqueline Bisset, Kobe, you should.
Can't remember.
You know what? Up Jacqueline Bisset. Yeah. And then look
any
up.
Any particular era or?
The Deep.
No.
So start there. Actually, one of the first posters I had up in my room when I was 5 was Jacqueline Bisset. So, but here, so follow with me, folks. This is the reason why I was nominated for the Biggest Ripoff in Hollywood History. You have the title character, the Greek tycoon, played by Anthony Quinn, who may or may not have some shady business practices. And at the beginning of the film, he meets the wife of an American senator. The senator is played by James Franciscus, for you Planet of the Apes fans out there. And his wife, played by Jacqueline Bisset. Way to go, Big James. Then he becomes, Franciscus becomes president, and in a really, you have to look this up on YouTube, as the president and first lady are walking on a beach, which, you know, could be Cape Cod, maybe, we don't know, but the president is shot in the head on the beach. No security around them, just the two of them, but the way it's shot by J. Lee Thompson, who could be a good director at times, not working with Charles Bronson, It's just a ludicrous setup. And of course, she becomes the first widow. She is grieving. And the only person that can give her comfort is the title character of the film. And she winds up marrying Anthony Quinn. And it becomes more like a contract than a marriage. Does this sound familiar to anybody out there? Possibly.
Maybe.
Possibly. And I know I don't know if this was the reason, or at least it probably had a big thing to deal with it, where you see at the end of credits that this is a work of fiction and everything coincidental, blah, 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 blah. It just seemed a little too familiar. It just seemed like somebody took some white out and took out the names and just kind of put them back.
That seems like one of those, like, way too soon moments.
Well, this is 1977. Now, and that was the problem with the Manchurian Candidate.
Which I was about to bring up.
Yes, because that one, that's a little too soon. Because that came out.
By no fault of their own.
Very
shortly afterwards.
Yeah, so, and Sinatra had, who was one of the producers on the film, had it shelved. So, and of course, not to be.
Who was a good friend of Jack Kennedy, anyway.
that was pretty good. So no disrespect, but The Manchurian Candidate's a great film. So glad it finally got released. And of course, it got me thinking about all the films that were altered, edited, and delayed right after 9/11.
Yes.
So, yeah. But this one, it was 11 years after the fact, and I don't remember how long Jackie Kennedy Onassis's marriage to that guy lasted. But yeah, it just, and this was in the era of they were making the big budget dramas that mm-hmm. nobody were seeing. I mean, it was Nicholas and Alexandra and those pictures, and this
actually
one.
Kinda liked.
You like Nicholas and
Alexandra? Yeah.
All 3 hours of it?
Well, you know, but there were a couple of good moments in there.
This is the guy who sits through the entire overture and intermission on Dr. Zhivago just so he can hear the music.
Well, yeah, and
it's
I still want the 5-hour cut of the Thin Red Line, but I'm not getting it.
Oh God.
What about the New World? I mean, where's the extended cut of that?
Somewhere out there. You just want Colin Farrell and Christian Bale.
No, it was actually I really didn't like that movie at all.
Okay.
It was really boring.
That was sarcastic. Emma, sarcasm?
Sarcastable.
South Park episode. So yeah, anyway, that film did not win the biggest ripoff in Hollywood history, according to the Golden Turkey Awards. It went to Dino De Laurentiis' King Kong.
That was a ripoff just because, you know, you felt ripped off after you paid your money at the movie theater.
And nobody cried when Jaws died. Of course, the famous Dino De Laurentiis, a.k.a. Giada's grandpa, talking about the giant monkey that is King Kong. So, but that film did give us Jessica Lange. And we're slightly better for it. So, Kobe.
Yep.
When are we bringing you back? What is Kobe watching someday?
I don't know. I got to see some stuff.
Yeah, you do. Thus, the what is Kobe watching?
Answer: not a lot.
Not a lot. No. So what have you guys watched recently?
We went to go see Thor: The Dark World.
No, yours was hopefully properly shown in the aspect that it should have been. I didn't get to see mine. So, how was Thor thrashing up London?
It was good. Well, Brian had a good point. He said that the bad guy was kind of like, you know, just throwaway. Like it was another like.
Like Thor picked him up and threw him away.
Well, no, he could have been substituted
through several dimensions,
with anything
as a matter
else,
of fact.
It was basically a vehicle to introduce the ether, and
which was basically the MacGuffin anyway. The whole thing was it was all about.
Well,
Thor,
no, I mean the ether plays into what is it, the some like keys to the universe or something.
You
like
know,
that?
Doctors use ether.
It's not the same.
Oh. Cider House Rules.
And Red Clay's a great album. Shut up.
But it was really good. I mean, I really think that the scene stealer, of course, is Tom Hiddleston as Loki. Like, you just can't... Not only as an actor portraying the role, but, like, the role of Loki is so well-written.
He's got a lot more to do than, say, the roided-up Brad Pitt, as I first described Thor.
He's not... I think that's a harsh judgment. I think Chris Hemsworth as Thor is very good.
Okay, but
besides,
I mean,
we already saw the roided up Brad Pitt in Troy, and we know how that went.
With lots of flying dagger and House of Flying Daggers.
I really liked it. It was fun, I love Tom Hiddleston as Loki. He's such a great character.
And now there are
Chris Lloyd was talking about they should give Loki his own movie.
Well, right now they have a YouTube clip of him talking with children in
the
library.
Oh my god,
I saw that.
So funny.
You saw that?
I love that he just like shoves her over. He's like, well, I just knocked you over with my hand. I don't need a hammer.
He'd hammer in the morning.
Yeah.
Now, tomorrow night on Svengoolie on MeTV at 10 o'clock, they're doing their Frankenstein Festival. Kobe, you watched Svengoolie because he was a guest on the show mm-hmm. twice. And you introduced Svengoolie to Fair Sweet Bianca.
That's right.
How'd that go?
We were flipping through the channels. He's on. Oh, it's Svengoolie. Who's Svengoolie? Oh, he's like Chicago Sammy Terry. Oh, okay.
Or he, you know, or Indy's Svengoolie. But yeah, we get the idea. So anyway, there's, I think this is their last installment of Frankenstein Fest. So 10 o'clock Saturday nights on MeTV. As if MeTV wasn't dorky enough on Saturday nights, because you get the original Batman, Lost in Space,
wow.
The original Star Trek,
woo.
Svengoolie, and then Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
That sounds like a very
that sounds like the best nerd Saturday night ever.
I just created your evening tomorrow night. You're welcome.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Brian, Monica, thank you for hanging out.
Thanks as always.
Thank you.
Emma, thank you for hanging out.
Plug the blogs.
We kind of had to. Yeah, plug the blogs.
UptightLovesWild .wordpress.com. I can't think.
Cinematicmusic.blogspot.com.
He's so much better.
Filmsociology.tumblr.com.
That's right.
There you go. So, we'll work on Emma's. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. And next week, the special post-Thanksgiving edition, will Kobe be here? You'll have to tune in and find
Who
out.
Knows?
You're listening to the Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
We gone. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.